Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Looky here, it's the 11th day of July, 2014. A hot and rainless one out here in the otherwise temperate rainforest that is almost level West Bicod, Virginia. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. That, of course, is where you will find access to the chat room. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com/chatroom. Jump right in. It's free. It's easy. And as welcoming a bunch of folks as you could ever hope to meet on the interweb tubes. Yep. So come on by if you've never been there. I think you will. Well, you'll enjoy it tremendously. Also at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com, the pop-out player, which works real dandy-like. Yes, indeed. Of course, if you're listening on an Smart or Android or whatever device, feel free to make use of the apps from Stitcher and or TuneIn Radio, with the general reminder that the advertisements you may run across there do absolutely nothing to help keep The Horn on the air. I mean, not a penny, not a sausage, no, nothing. So if you see an ad there in conjunction with listening on one of those apps, and maybe it's for something really hateful and noxious and disgusting like, oh, ExxonMobil or something, just understand, nobody's writing the big money, big corporate money check to The Horn. No. So just bear that in mind, okay? Thank you. Thank you very kindly. Let's see. Oh, yeah. Also at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com, the ever-present PayPal button. You know, we closed the program last night down $45 as we headed into the end of the week. And thanks very much to Anthony and Linda's subscriptions. The morning started with us only down $25. So that's right, only $175 to raise this evening to finish the week okay. You know, because there are masseur, Agnes's masseur requires payment. And do you have any idea how expensive it is to house and feed a Gulfstream 5 jet? Have you priced spinning rims on a Maybach or a Bentley? Yeah, don't. It'll just blow you away. So $175 is the fundraising goal this evening. And hopefully we'll get that taken care of in any denomination, any combination that you so prefer. Of course, you can also use the traditional mail address, which is at the bottom of the contribute page at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com, and that works too. Just remember, you don't make those payable to Bob Kincaid, because Bob Kincaid never sees it. Boss Man Wayne handles all that stuff. Okay, so it is Friday on the front porch. It is our week ending, I guess is the better phrase. It is our week ending roundtable among actual people who actually have ideas and talk about facts, as opposed to the martini-sodden pundits inside the Beltway that one frequently finds in the for-profit media. You know, your Peggy Nooners and your George Wills and so forth, and carry on. right? We'll be getting that started probably in about an hour. But where to start? Where to start? How about some heroic tales, since it's Friday on the front porch and we're wrapping stuff up? How about some heroic tales of freedom protecting in America? Carl posted this on my Facebook page, and it seemed like a nice place to start. You know, freedom is constantly under assault in America. It's under assault from people who just don't understand that if you don't have a gun, you're not free. If you can't terrorize the entire shopping population in your local Wally World by carrying in an assault rifle, like identical to or similar to the ones that were used in places like Newtown, Connecticut, and Aurora, Colorado, and other places, well, you know, what's freedom for? And so, we have a grand experiment. I guess we could call this segment Tales from the Old Southeast. There is an experiment in freedom taking place now in Georgistan, in which firearms, deadly, deadly, deadly firearms in the hands of lawful gun owners who at any given moment in time can instantaneously transform themselves in the space that is required to move a trigger sufficiently to force the firing pin to fire in the firearm in question into an awful gun owner. That experiment is underway and freedom is being protected in Georgistan. Athens, Georgia, is a lovely place. It's a college town. It is the home of the University of Georgia. It's the locus of an American musical scene that's given rise to awesome, awesome talents. But it is, in fact, being Athens, being in Georgia, subject to the expansion of freedom that has taken place in that state, in which they have decided that the good common sense that was exercised in the late 1800s in Dodge City, freaking Kansas, was entirely too liberal and gun freedom. Word. It's choking off freedoms. That's what they were doing in Dodge City when they made you take your shooting gun off when you was walking into the bar there. They were hating freedom. So you don't have to do that in Georgistan anymore. You don't have to take your gun off in a church or a bar or a little league field or nowhere, because freedom can always be assaulted somewhere. And so it was. Oh, wait a minute. Daggummit, I'm usually pretty good about checking datelines. Carl! This is an old story. Oh, well, it probably bears retelling just the same. Fats Cafe in Athens, Georgia. Please, if you're going to post news stories, they need to be news and need to not be 7 months old. But there's some fun in here, because this has certain echoes. You remember what was it, Arizona? Yeah, the Arizona where the man borrowed his wife's pink Smith & Wesson Freedom Protector and then shot off his thing that rhymes with Protector, except it's minus the E-R-T part of Protector. Yeah. And the cops, instead of saying, hey, you know, really, you don't need a 9mm handgun to go into the local grocery store and get yourself a bottle of pop and a loaf of bread and a jug of milk. Leave it in the car. Hell, maybe leave it in home. No. No, the cops instead said, we need to be cognizant of the fact that you really should use a holster. Sheesh. Well, this is the same thing from January of 2014 in Athens, Georgia. Fats Cafe, F-A-T-Z, Fats Cafe, where a 22-year-old man was digging into his pocket to reach for the money to pay for his check, when he got his finger hung up on his trigger and discharged his Freedom Protector through the chair into the floor, at which point it ricocheted and the bullet bounced and landed on his table. Wolverines! Yeah. Now, he paid his bill. After he'd shot up the place, he paid the bill. But later on, when he realized the cops were there, he came back and said, well, I just wanted to let everybody know I realize I done made a mistake, and I'm willing to pay for the repair on the chair. He had his Freedom Protector wedged between his belt and his pants. And the officer on the scene, who checked to make sure that our Freedom Protector had a carry permit, said, son, the way you're carrying your Freedom Protector is not, and this is a quote, not the best way for safety. Nary a mention from the law enforcement official that maybe, if you're going down to Fats's Cafe for an Elvis, that's a grilled peanut butter and banana sandwich with mayonnaise. If you're going down to the Fats Cafe for your daily Elvis, maybe it might be possible. I know it might be worth considering that maybe you can leave the Freedom Protector at home. But no, we can't do that. Because freedom. And, you know, Wolverines! And Jesus, and Merca, and love, and God. Yeah. And states' rights. Nope, you gotta take your Freedom Protector if you want to go downtown and get you an Elvis. Well, I tell you what. If you are ever anywhere near the Shoals in Alabama, and you wandered around somewhere close to Court Street in Florence, there's a little place that's been open since the beginnings of the 20th century. Man came from Texas, went east instead of west, came to buy some cattle in Alabama, and liked the place so much that he stayed, and his last name was Trowbridge. And he opened himself up a little store, a little lunch stand there on the north end of Court Street. And it has been operating continuously ever since. For a time, they made their own ice cream. Now they have it made under contract. Mercy sakes, get a scoop of the orange pineapple ice cream. It's magnificent. But the point of all this is you can also get an Elvis, a peanut butter and banana sandwich on toast. And ain't it good? It certainly is. But if you're not in the mood for that, you can also try the pimento cheese, which they themselves make by hand on a daily basis. Daggummit, now we're off and running on the food porn at 14 minutes past the hour, and we may never get back. No, we'll get back. We'll get back because there's lots more freedom to discuss. Now this case of Freedom Protecting comes to us out of Oregon. Mm-hmm. The story, as I have it, actually comes from the New York Daily News. It's an Associated Press report going back a couple of days. The dateline is Grants Pass, Oregon, which has nothing to do with our Grant, who is a or a Grant rant. I don't know. This could occasion a Grant rant. Are you in there? No, no, he's not in the chat room yet. Grants Pass, Oregon, where a fella had gone visiting to one of his friends who lived in an apartment there, and apparently he wasn't getting around so good. John Andrew Meyer Jr. was having a little trouble getting up out of his seat on the couch there at his friend's house there in the apartment in Grants Pass, Oregon. Maybe he had a bum leg or something like that. Or maybe it was just one of those really soft, comfy sofas that you sink into and it's a little hard to get all the way up and out. But John Andrew Meyer Jr. was not the only one visiting that particular apartment complex. Upstairs, a mother and her 5-year-old daughter were also visiting with friends. And John Andrew Meyer Jr., having trouble getting up out of the couch, used his freedom protecting rifle gun, which may have been more than simply a semi-automatic assault rifle. Yeah, using his Second Amendment freedom protector, he went to leverage himself up out of the sofa and managed to unleash a burst of automatic rifle fire through the ceiling, killing the 5-year-old girl upstairs, directly upstairs, on top of him through the ceiling. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, this country is not free unless we periodically water the tree of liberty with the blood of 5-year-olds. For that is the tree of liberty's natural manure. 5-year-old Elisa Bobbitt of Shady Cove, Oregon, went to be with Jesus. And apartment resident Karen Hancock went to be with the emergency responders at the emergency room because she, too, had been wounded by the burst of freedom that emanated from the muzzle of John Andrew Meyer Jr.'s freedom protector. Folks are worried about John Andrew Meyer. His fiance told the law enforcement authorities that he was just a big teddy bear. However, she had previously filed a restraining order against him in which she referred to him as an unpredictable drug addict. She also said he had threatened her with a gun, had threatened to burn down her house, slash her tires, and break the windows on her car. Man, the cost of freedom. The AP story notes that Lori Nelson, who lives nearby, went outside to see what was going on when she heard the ruckus. Ruckus, in this case, being a euphemism for burst of gunfire. That's when she saw John Andrew Meyer Jr. running down the driveway, and then almost simultaneously, she saw Danielle R. Wilson, the mother of Elisa Wilson, come running outside holding her baby in her arms, you know, like one of those photos from, say, our nasty little war in Iraq. And Lori Nelson said that Mama looked at her and she looked up at me and said, "Please help my baby." Because freedom. Now, the Oregon authorities apparently do not love freedom. Because the John Andrew Meyer Jr. has in fact subsequently been charged with manslaughter, not murder, assault, and unlawful possession of a machine gun. He already has a lawyer, John Andrew Meyer does. The lawyer's name is Gary Berlant. And Gary Berlant says that John Andrew Meyer Jr., his client, was assured, a word which apparently now has a fluid, an entirely fluid meaning, he'd been assured that the gun wasn't fully automatic. See, if the gun had not been fully automatic, when it went off, it only would have fired one bullet and maybe would have only wounded Karen Hancock instead of killing Elisa Bobbitt. Or maybe it would have only killed Elisa Bobbitt, 5 years old, and not wounded Karen Hancock. These are important distinctions. I feel safer, don't you? This country is getting safer by the minute. Every time some lawful gun owner who may either be a complete teddy bear or an unpredictable drug addict, every time one of them guns up, and this guy had four freedom protectors, every time one of them guns up, it gets a little safer. Unless you just randomly happen to be 5-year-old Elisa Bobbitt. Or maybe randomly happen to be Karen Hancock. Right? Yeah. Man, ain't we just some kind of free around here. That freedom's getting a little lethal, isn't it? Sadly, yes. Made me think of this. Sweet and to the point, right? Crosby, Stills, and Nash, Find the Cost of Freedom. But not to worry. Even when the Tree of Liberty gets watered with its natural manure, which is the blood of 5-year-olds, there are folks out there ready to remind us about all that freedom. You might recall the name of Mike Vanderbilt. That's VanderBoeGh. Mike Vanderbilt, because I don't really know what to do with that diphthong there. It seems appropriate. Mike Vanderbilt comes, I believe, from Alabamistan. He's had periodic 15 minutes of fame in the past. He founded an outfit that he calls the Three Percenters. And during the last election cycle, or sometime in the past, there was an incident where, well, he was basically calling for armed revolution against the United States government, otherwise known as treason. And I think the guy's also on disability, getting disability payments from the country he hates. But even though he's disabled, Mike Vanderbilt, is able to get around. And he made his way all the way to Texas Stan, where he gave a little talk to the Howard County chapter of Open Curry, Texas. And in a world where five-year-olds pay with their lives and their blood for Mike Vanderbilt's rights, well, Mike has it all in perspective. Yes, he does. He does. Why not? The boys, you got to understand, the boys down to Open Carry, Texas, they understand all about different calibers of weapons and different weapons themselves and magazines and gun oil and ballistic gelatin, but they have never heard of those little foam rubber thingies you can put on the end of a microphone that'll knock down a little bit of the wind blowing across same if you're shooting out of doors. Well, shooting has a different meaning for them now, doesn't it? I reckon that's a dry, hot wind down there in Texas, don't you? I'm getting all warmed up and sweaty just hearing it.
What they say is exactly precisely true. I am a bona fide extremist, at least according to some folks.
Now he's standing there talking to the Open Carry Texas folks, and he says, I'm a bona fide extremist. And this is one of those little pro tips. And this is just because I'm listening and watching at the same time. Someday maybe we'll expand things so y'all can watch too. But when you go to a speaking event, it is good to finish dinner or lunch before you get up to start speaking to the assembled faithful. Now, I don't know what it is that Mike Vanderbilt is a chomping on, but, you know, you don't have dinner while you're trying to talk. Mama made that pretty clear early on. Don't chew with your mouth open, and don't talk while you're chewing. Maybe Mike Vanderbilt was raised by weasels. Who knows? A damn lousy thing to say about a weasel, isn't it?
I'd like to start my speech today, though, with two shout-outs. One to my most devoted sponsor, 100 Heads Life and Casualty Company. You guys know who you are.
That's probably an insider eliminationist joke about killing people, I'm reckoning, because it got a couple of chuckles. I don't think that was 100 claps, do you?
And the other shout-out is to the twice-elected president of the United States, Barack Hussein Obama.
Got to get that Hussein in there.
Singular milestone in his career, or indeed of anyone who's ever sat in the White House Oval Office. For some time later this month, by my estimation, Mr. Obama will have presided over the 100 millionth FBI firearm sales background check. 100 million? Now, for a guy that's only been in office for a term and a half, that's quite an accomplishment. As a firearm salesman representing the Unintended Consequences Armaments Corporation, he has managed to put even Bill Clinton in the deep shade. So, Barack, you're the best, biggest firearm salesman in world history. And that is some kind of legacy. So I would like to thank you.
Now, okay. He's a real character, this Mike Vanderbilt. What he's talking about is the raving white paranoid mania that was ginned up by the NRA and gun owners of America and gun shops all over the country, that non-traditional one in our White House was somehow going to infringe upon their rights to keep and bear arms so that little five-year-olds could wind up getting their brains blown out in the apartment upstairs by a guy who was using his machine gun as a crutch. That's what he's talking about. All them white folks out there running around buying guns because they're afraid that the dark-skinned revolution is a-coming. More on that in a moment.
You, from the bottom of my heart, on behalf of the armed citizenry of the United States, and we won't even mention what you've done for ammunition sales. But thanks for everything, Barack. You may go down in history as this country's worst president ever, but you are one hell of an armaments salesman.
Isn't it fun? I don't know if this guy has like tertiary stage syphilis or what, but he's forgotten the 8 years of George W. Dimleader Bush, in which we just about completely wrecked the economy of the United States, started wars of choice, got 5,000 American service personnel killed, God knows how many wounded, wrecked a couple of countries, destabilized about three-fourths of the planet. But, you know, that non-traditional one in our White House, he's the worst president ever. I got a T-shirt that says otherwise.
You know, in doing my research before coming here today, I noted with interest that one of your major employers here in Big Springs is the Federal Correctional Institution. Now, this interested me because I have so many people recently who are interested in putting me inside one of those places for what they imagine is my sedition or even the incitement to insurrection.
Oh, cool your paranoid jets, Mike Vanderbilt. Ain't nobody gonna put you on the inside. You nobody. The feds ain't coming to put you in the stir, Mike Vanderbilt. Hell, we let a cranky old fart in Nevada run around and have his buddies pointing sniper rifles at federal agents, and he ain't going anywhere. Hell no. You people have scared the country plumb to death. You've scared the country so much with your freedom protecting shooting guns, watering that tree of liberty with the natural manure of five-year-old blood, that we won't get anywhere near you with the law. Treason, schmeason, open season.
Not to mention their irritation at my violation of some newly oppressive citizen disarmament state laws. And to those who have been worried in the past about the president administration closing Guantanamo Bay, I always reassure them, don't worry. The Obama administration will cease trying to close Guantanamo the moment they figure out that they can imprison us there. So, for those of you who work at Big Spring FCI, maybe I'll see you through the bars one day.
devoutly to be wished, but highly unlikely. And no Americans can be sent to Guantanamo. I mean, hell, we can't even murder them on the spot unless they're in a foreign country, you know, like Yemen or something. Hoo-ah.
Or not. But, folks, I am honored to be here today to speak on the subject of restoring the Constitution. If for no other reason than that task is what I've devoted the past two decades of my life to accomplish. This is a subject that consumes the attention of many Americans all over the country these days. Yesterday, I stood outside town in the dust of the old Comanche Trail. Last weekend, I gave a speech on the same subject in Massachusetts, almost literally in the shadow of the famous Springfield Armory, where the Men of Shays Rebellion...
Almost literally in the shadow of. In other words, not in the shadow of. Aren't they precious?
...intended for their vision of what they believe they fought the revolution for. On Patriots Day, I was out in the Nevada desert speaking on the same subject at the Bundy Ranch. In the last year, I've given speeches and talks at the Alamo, on the steps of the Connecticut State House in Hartford, and other places from Alabama to New York State to Temple, Texas. Next month, I'm going up to Colorado. The month after that, I'll be smuggling myself and some 30-round magazines across the border into New York.
By the way, he's still eating dinner.
But in each place always comes the question, how can we restore the Constitution? How can we return to the founders' vision?
Okay, can I just point this out? I'm skeptical of this man's ability to spell Constitution, let alone understand what is in it. And when you hear restore the Constitution, please understand that means get rid of the Constitution. Yeah. Jesus. Oh well, let's keep going. Restore the Constitution means get rid of, say, the 14th Amendment. What's on that whole Mark Levin list? Nullification, that's a big one. When he says restore the Constitution, he means let's take out all the stuff we don't like and go for something a little bit more like the Confederate Constitution.
Of a government of limited powers which preserves liberty and property while upholding the rule of law and, most importantly, operating within that rule of law. For this administration, this regime...
Oh, it's a regime now. You know, just like that other Hussein, Saddam. It's a regime. It's not a presidency. Barack Hussein Obama is not going to voluntarily leave office when his term ends in January of 2017. Because it's a regime.
Seems to operate ever more increasingly as a lawless gang bent not on the rule of law, but rather on the rule of men, which is to say the law of the jungle enforced by the iron fist of government power.
Yeah, jungle. No, he did. He used the word jungle. And you know, he was thinking the animal reference that comes after that, too.
But how do we restore the Constitution?
Can't wait for this.
I think first and foremost, we must tell the truth.
Well, you can start any time there, Mike Vanderbilt. So far, you haven't.
Not only to those who we are trying to convince to join us, and as well to those who are trying to defeat us. But most importantly, we must tell the truth to ourselves, no matter how...
And all slithy were the board robes and the bone wraps outgraved.
How unpleasant that is. As Patrick Henry said in his immortal speech to the Virginia Convention on March the 23rd, 1775, it is natural to man to indulge in the illusions of hope. We are apt to shut our eyes against the painful truth and listen to the song of that siren until she transforms us into beasts. Is this the part of wise men engaged in a great and arduous struggle for liberty? Are we disposed to be of the number of those who, having eyes, see not, and having ears, hear not? The things which so nearly concern their temporal salvation? For my part, whatever anguish of spirit it may cost, I am willing to know the whole truth, to know the worst, and to provide for it. I have but one lamp by which my feet are guided, and that is the lamp of experience. I know of no way of judging the future but by the past. And what, I ask you, have been our experiences of the recent past? I will be bluntly honest, for I know of no other way to say what is on my heart. We are at present two peoples, two countries really, living within a common border and sharing mostly a common language, but divided upon the answer to this question: does the government serve the people, or do the people serve the government? This is not a question that the answer can be finessed, negotiated, or ignored. It is one or the other, that of individual liberty as the founders intended, or of collectivist power in service to the few. Every smaller question we struggle with is merely a subset of this larger question. Every answer is a component, for good or ill, of the ultimate answer upon which hinges the fates of our liberty, our property, our lives, and those of our children and their children.
Except for 5-year-olds who get blown away in the name of freedom by, oh, never mind.
Many of you will admit that in your heart of hearts you know this to be true, yet we shrink from the honest conclusion. And that conclusion is that such mutually exclusive worldviews cannot long exist without one or the other winning out. History tells us, the founders would tell us themselves where...
Okay, I know we've got a lot of veterans in the audience. In the Horn Family Commune congregation. I have a question. And I know a lot of those veterans have actually heard shots fired in anger. And know what an existential threat that is. If the shots started firing, flying, bullets started flying, whatever. Anybody want to guess where these baggers, birthers, deathers, tenthers, booger eaters, Republicans, John Birchers, and libertarians would be found? Man, you wouldn't see anything but assholes and elbows. Save me! This is treason, and it is also a manifestation of profound cowardice. These are back shooters. Plain and simple. Bushwhackers. Brigands. Highwaymen.
They hear that neither side of such a divide will surrender without a fight, which means there will be a fight. To think otherwise is to whistle past the graveyard of our own history and that of republics dead, gone, and turned to blood-stained dust when they could not overcome similar corruption and collectivist rot from within, combined by barbaric attack from without.
Collectivist rot from within. You can translate that as people being able to go to the doctor when they're sick. You can translate that as having roads that are paid for with federal funds and paved and painted and, you know, collectivist rot. Collectivist rot, being able to turn on the water in your kitchen sink and actually drink what comes out without being poisoned to death by some corporation. Collectivist rot. You got it? Because, see, there's no individual teabagger out there that's making sure that the water supply is safe. There's no individual teabagger out there running a road grader or a surfacing machine. All on his lonely, individualist, non-collectivist initiative, making sure that we have an infrastructure and bridges that don't collapse. There's no teabagger out there who's sitting ever at the ready to go out and single-handedly put out a house fire. Collectivist rot, fire departments. There's no lonely, individualistic, personal, self-bootstrap-pulling-up teabagger sitting out there with all his guns trying to make sure that children are properly vaccinated so that we don't have epidemics of entirely preventable diseases in this country. Collectivist rot, that. Well, hell, our military itself, which they profess to adore, is more of that collectivist rot. No, Mike Vanderbilt is a lone wolf. In fact, Mike Vanderbilt makes that long walk to the mailbox once a month and cashes his collectivist rot and puts it in the bank, or maybe in a mayonnaise jar that he buries in the backyard and hopes to God he can remember where he buried it the next time he sobers up. Collectivist rot. I'll bet you when he reads Ayn Rand's Atlas Shrugged, his lips move.
We like to think that all our fellow Americans, even those who plainly state that they are committed to stealing our liberty and our property and attempting to control our very lives.
Because, you know, that's what we're doing when we're trying to make sure that five-year-olds don't get blown away by freedom protectors or theaters full of moviegoers don't get blasted away by somebody who's decided to go on a gun collecting and, you know, homicide binge. Yet we're trying to steal their liberties. Asshole. Oh, dude, let's continue. We're not that far.
Are merely suffering from differences of opinion that can be overcome by the right mix of persuasion or electoral politics.
Persuasion, electoral politics, or, you know, flying lead. Jacketed or otherwise.
Yet how many of us have tried such methods with every fiber of our being and fallen short, not because we were wrong, but because those of the other side were impervious to such arguments, to such tactics?
Yeah, you know what? I am. I am absolutely impervious to the ravings of a hallucinogenic madman. I am impervious to the arguments of Mike Vanderbilt. You see where he's going, don't you? He's sure he can shoot some sense into us. You know, our little brain pans will be filled with sense as the space that was formerly occupied by brains leaks out onto the pavement.
For they believe completely in their right to their appetites for our liberty, our property, and our lives with all the religious fervor.
God damn, I don't have an appetite for his effing liberty. I have an appetite for a grilled pimento cheese sandwich from Trowbridge's on North Court Street in Florence, Alabama. Can you create an image inside your own mind for what this guy thinks we are? We're gun zombies, just wandering the countryside. Must eat guns for collective. You know, we're not parents. We're not grandparents who love our little children and grandchildren and don't want to see them die in a hail of freedom when some lawful gun owner turns into an awful one. No, hell no. We have an appetite for their liberty.
Of a pagan worship of naked power.
Huh?
West Edith, huh?
I gotta back up a little bit to get this in its full context. I don't know about you. I want to know about more of this pagan, this naked pagan worship. Sounds like kind of fun. As long as I'm not the naked pagan in question. Now, that tends to make people say, the horror! The horror! Mike Vanderbilt. Blech.
Yet how many of us have tried such methods with every fiber of our being and fallen short? Not because we were wrong, but because those of the other side were impervious to such arguments, to such tactics. For they believed completely in their right to their appetites for our liberty, our property, and our lives, with all the religious fervor of a pagan worship of naked power.
Okay, we've got the whole sentence. Let me back up for a minute. You know, I'm forever mentioning that you really need to be downloading or listening live to Dr. Bill O'Brien. This is a classic case in point. He has spent the last week talking about language and the language that was used in the Declaration of Independence. On Wednesday in particular, he analyzed, or was it Tuesday? He analyzed why it is that the Declaration of Independence says life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Because in a Lockean worldview, it would be life, liberty, and property. But Thomas Jefferson, drafting this thing, took particular pains to say pursuit of happiness and not property. Because property is not in the Declaration of Independence for a very specific reason. Pursuit of happiness is. Because happiness, in its 18th century meaning, has to do with the good of the community, the good of the body politic, the good of what the ancient Greeks would have referred to as the polis. And it does not equate with how many firearms one has collected, or how much property, or in the case of the of pre-1865, who much property one owns. And yet, there it is, right there, coming out of the not at all well-screwed-down mouth of Mike Vanderbilt, right there.
Wrapped in a catechism of lies. They believe that the people serve the government, their vision of the government.
Yeah, not really. This is one long attempt at building a straw man, which he will then beat the snot out of. That's the thing about straw men. They don't fight back very well.
And you better do what they say, or else.
Or else what? Or else we'll give you universal single-payer health care? Or else we'll declare that corporations aren't people anymore? Or else we'll try to make sure that we don't engage in any more really stupid wars of choice? Or else. Gun fondlers.
The founders had a name for such people with such appetites. And it is honest to call them by it. If, as the Bible says, that by their fruits ye shall know them. Then
did he just call us fruits? Just check it.
Let us call them what they are, domestic enemies of the Constitution.
Yeah. Yeah, okay, did you hear that?
Yeah.
All two people who are there are clapping wildly away and saying, yeah, domestic enemies of the Constitution. Well, what do you do with a domestic enemy? You kill him. Right? With your freedom protector. Wolverines! Mm-hmm. In that sentence, you hear where they want to go. How many years now have I been talking about the Cold Civil War? It's on, it's been going on, and people like Mike Vanderbilt want to hot it up. As long as somebody else is doing the shooting, or he can shoot somebody in the back. Because they are, among other things, and this is the only thing that's keeping us from a hot civil war, cowards. Their courage resides in bottles of the pill or liquor variety, and in the power of group psychosis. So you and me, us, we, for instance, little old us, the Horn Family Commune Congregation, we are domestic terrorists and are to be eliminated so that the Tree of Liberty may be watered with our blood, which is, of course, its natural manure.
The fact that many of them took an oath to defend the same founder's republic that they daily attack should be proof enough for an honest observer to admit that such a term fits such people. And if no oath, no law, no court restrains such appetites, then what will?
So he wants a court to suppress the free speech of people who don't want little five-year-old girls being slaughtered. He, on the other hand, should remain free to advocate such slaughter by advocating that everybody got to have a gun. See how it works. Who's the despot? Who's the tyrant? Who's the one that yearns for an end of civil liberties? This freak would get rid of every civil liberty we had as long as he gets to have a gun. He started out by saying he was afraid that he was going to be imprisoned for speaking. Well, he's not. Like it or no, this is clearly political speech. It's also about probably 90% of the way toward incitement to riot if there were enough people at Open Carry, Texas, in Big Springs, showing up to do anything more than turn over a phone booth. Wait, those don't exist anymore. I lost the 20-year-olds. There were these boxes, and they had phones in them that you could put money in. It was called payphone, and the boxes were called phone booths. And just about, and you know, anything more than one or two people can turn one over. Never mind. I am fast becoming an anachronism.
The founders had an answer, and you know it today, too.
Oh, back up.
The attack should be proof enough for an honest observer to admit that such a term fits such people. And if no oath, no law, no court restrains such appetites, then what will it? Founders had an answer, and you know it today too. In your hearts, if you're honest enough to admit it, you know. Let us be honest enough to admit first to ourselves and then to proclaim to those domestic enemies of liberty and thence to the world that failing all other appeals to peaceful means, that the founder's solution to such tyranny is still available, still potent, and still waiting. For when democracy turns to tyranny, the armed citizenry still gets to vote.
That right there is what you call incitement to riot. When democracy turns to tyranny, the armed citizenry still gets to vote. What are they voting with? You understand the meaning. He's too much a coward to come right out and say, let's start shooting the people we don't like. He's already declared that Barack Hussein Obama is a tyrant. He is suggesting open warfare against the government of the United States. And there may only be two or three people there, but they'll go home and it'll turn into a shampoo commercial. They'll tell two or three people, and they'll tell two or three people, and they'll tell two or three people, and it's Texas. Now, I'm not a doomsayer, and I'm not a prophet, and I'm not trying to scare anybody. Oh, no. I do, however, suggest it might be useful to take note of these people, because they used to be on the fringe, and they used to mimeograph their little sheets on ditto machines and pay two or three cents a copy at the Xerox, the great big giant Xerox machine down to the public library, and put them on the cork board down to the postal office. Not so much now. And the single greatest danger we face is the fear of our government to deal with them appropriately. Ask yourself, why isn't Cliven Bundy in jail? Or at least, why has he not been charged? Has there been no federal grand jury to meet since he engaged in his little act of treason? Because you see, what this guy Mike Vanderbilt is essentially doing is denying the value of due process. He wants for somebody else to go down in a rain of fire shooting it out with the federales, as opposed to letting a jury, tried and true, determine whether or not, say, in this hypothetical instance, he just engaged in incitement to riot or engaged in speech which is not protected under the First Amendment. We know from recent Supreme Court decisions that the First Amendment protects a lot of things. It protects sweet Granny McCullen's ability to go and show a gory photograph of a baby, a dead baby, to a woman trying to go in and deal with a healthcare crisis. Sweet Granny McCullen gets to go and counsel a woman who's only walking into a Planned Parenthood so she can get a mammogram. Because of free speech. And I remind you that all nine justices joined in that opinion. And so, apparently, advocating the violent overthrow of the government of the United States, which he just did, is protected. Because we are more scared of him than he is of us. And he's out there, along with a number of others, trying to whip the ignorant into a big enough frenzy to make them start shooting and go from having a cold civil war to a nice hot one.
This is the promise. This is the warning, the threat embodied by the Gadsden flag of our founders. Don't tread on me, it says. Don't tread on us.
God. And I do the funny voices. And he did it for me. Don't tread on us. Who do you think you are, Charlton freaking Heston? So that, you know, that food for thought. Just food for thought. That's all that is. There is a segment of the population of the United States who defines freedom as having their right to keep firearms protected so that little five-year-olds can pay for that right with their lives. These are they. And they openly long and yearn for the day when they can start shooting back in some sort of American free fire zone. The thing is, they insist on determining when and where that free fire zone will occur. Our buddy the Angry Indian pointing out, this fucker's talking treason. Yes, he is. And he's not the only one. There's lots of them talking this treason. Because they're tired of this country. When they say, we want our country back, they're talking about 1859. That was their country when they owned their people. They want to be left in peace with their firearms, but left in peace with their firearms means being able to take it with you when you're going down to Fats's for an Elvis. Creepy, huh? Checking in on the mailbag. Tim from L.A. pointing out, subject line, why carry? Just hearing all these morons who carry encourages me not to carry so I can keep my firearm. Minus the idiots who kill people by accident, aren't there laws in various cities and counties, be it felony or misdemeanor, to discharge a firearm within city limits? Yes. Out in the country, even here. One of the reasons that I can't have a garden is I'm within 500 feet of another dwelling, which means that I can't go popping off a few rounds to get rid of some of the deer that eat the garden. Because I could not stand myself if one of my bullets was, instead of hitting Bambi, to go astray and maybe kill a child in his crib. I could not stand that. Therefore, I will not do it. Tim continues, so the morons who shoot themselves in the leg, foot, or in some cases their privates, can be arrested for discharging their firearms negligently within city limits and, if found guilty, lose their Second Amendment right to carry? Not necessarily. The guy who shot blasted his penis out in Arizona, he ain't going to lose nothing. I mean, well, you know, except the aforementioned penis. But he'll still be able to. You don't have to have a penis to protect freedom. Because, you know, the pistol is kind of subbing in psychologically for that anyway. Tim says, suffice to say, these dumbasses never thought about that legal scenario. Oh, sure they do. But in Georgia or Arizona, you're just going to get a lecture about how you need a holster next time. See? Jessica pointing out he doesn't know how to spell regime either. Marty pointing out while listening to all this, and they want to know why I want to go expat. Yeah, I'm too old to immigrate to Australia. Probably a little too sensitive to the sun, too, when you get right down to it. By the way, early on, Marty pointed out with it, about LeBron James' return to Cleveland. Yeah, Yeah, LeBron's going back to Cleveland. I didn't think it would happen. I thought he was just going to arm twist Miami for a little more money. But he is. He's going back to Cleveland. And I'm boxing up the frayed purple velvet robe with the appliqued moon and stars and my old magic eight ball with the cracked window that says "Answer Hazy, ask again later." I'm packing that whole thing up and I'm sending it off to Dave Zirin over at Edge of Sports, because he called this a year ago. He predicted this. He said LeBron will go back to Cleveland. And so I guess Cleveland is really happy, right? Well, Cleveland deserves some happiness. Who knows what was going through the mind of LeBron James? He is no dummy. Maybe he read the news that the Republican National Convention will be held in Cleveland in 2016 and figured that the people of that city, that once great industrial giant, deserved a little good news. I mean, okay, so the Republican National Convention coming to Cleveland in 2016 is great news for the sex workers of the city. And the ones, especially the ones who are into your more expensive, kinky stuff. Because that goes, wherever the Republican Party goes, the weird sex work goes through the roof. I imagine there are already plans being made by an entire cadre of sex workers who specialize in a particular kink, heading to Cleveland just on the suspicion that David Vitter of Louisiana will be heading up there. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So LeBron said. Well, okay, maybe the sex workers are happy, but God, how about the normal people? Let's give them something to smile about and says, "I'm back." I personally think that's the real reason behind LeBron's return to Cleveland. Just trying to take a little of the sting out of having a whole bunch of birthers, deathers, tenthers, booger eaters, Republicans, libertarians, and birchers descend upon your city for a week. God, they'll be cleaning up for a month of Sunday. The Cuyahoga River may catch fire just from the proximity effect. True. I think I was being a little bit sexist there. Absolutely. Jessica noting, don't forget lady guns and the carrying ladies. Have your femme freedom protector spill out of your purse at Starbucks. Equal idiot time, Bob. Oh, yes. We can't forget them. What? Sam Cedar pointed out that if the Cavaliers make the NBA Finals in 2016, the GOP will have to wait until the final series is over before they have their convention. The Cavaliers and GOP will occupy the same space. The Cavs have first dibs. Well, I think I just turned into a Cavs fan. Yep. And by the way, breaking news. Well, I first saw it about 4:30 this afternoon Eastern Time. There's an earthquake and tsunami warning out at this hour. And it is sad to say that it is for Miyagi and Fukushima and those prefectures of Honshu Island in the Japanese chain. Please. Well, you just hope there won't be any. Well, and you know, you hope in one hand and in the other one, and see which one fills up first, right? Yeah. Oh, and by the way, I'd like to extend thanks to Danny. Danny just took us down to only $125 to go for our fundraising this evening, noting, "This is just for my sheer delight in cackling over how you pronounce this shithead's last name." He's talking about Mike Vanderbilt. I challenge all commune family members to make a similar or more or less donation, if only in appreciation for Mike Vanderbilt. Well, what am I spot? It's B-O-E-U-G-H. Or something. That is a diphthong up with which I will not put. I remember sitting down in Germany with my kind and genial hosts and just writing down the letters B-O-E-H-N-E-R and saying, I'm not going to tell you how he insists we pronounce this until after you've, you know, given it some good, you know, given it a good run through the Hochdeutsch. And they looked at me and looked at it and said, Bühne. I said, so closer to Boner than Boehner? Yeah. I said, because he pronounces it Boehner. And they started laughing. The only time they laughed harder was when I told them about the marketing of St. Pauli Girl beer in the United States. You remember the advertising campaign. She's got a couple of great big mugs of beer, and she's wearing the Bavarian dirndl and everything. And my genial hosts laughed and said, but that beer is produced in northern Germany, and they're... what? And laughed merrily. And they laughed also at the idea that B-O-E-H-N-E-R is Boehner. And I have no idea. Maybe I should... No, wait. I'm wrong country. I guess Jeffrey's not in the chat room, is he? No. Because I guess Vanderbilt is Dutch? No clue. None whatsoever. Accent grave over the E. Right. No. Marty, what about St. Pauli Girl in northern Germany? Well, St. Pauli Girl, you know, the imagery is all Bavaria, which is not northern Germany. But the beer is actually produced by a company in northern Germany, and they're using southern German imagery to sexualize the beer, because I remember the posters not growing up, but in my dorm room in college, or not my dorm room, somebody else's dorm room, and, you know, and beautiful, beautiful blonde woman, you know, busty with the dirndl and the mugs of beer, and it just says you never forget your first girl. Nothing like a little sexism to go with your beer. So that's what that is. Luda is not happy with Cleveland's owner. Luda says, subject line, LeBron, I'm absolutely ashamed of Cleveland for taking that sorry sack of shit back after what he did. It's greedy, money-grubbing, illiterate assholes like this that make me hate NBA-style basketball. Sorry, I just had to vent. And I certainly think you just did, Luda, and that'll probably be the greatest controversy generated this evening. What? Yeah, you know how this goes. I have no control over what winds up being interesting to you guys. So that there, 20 minutes past the hour, we have reached well past the first hour of the program, working our way to the halfway mark. It is, in fact, Friday on the front porch on the horn. And Friday on the front porch of the horn, on the horn means that we're going to have our roundtable discuss. Well, it's kind of an oblong, really. There's no table. It's the interweb. It's the interweb tubes. Okay, everybody's sitting somewhere separately. Screw that. But we're going to have our Friday on the front porch conversation, which you are welcome to join by sending a contact request on Skype to Sparky Dunk, SparkyDunc, Sparky Dunk, which will get you into the conversation. You are welcome to join in, as noted. And we'll take a little break. And see who all we have in the conversation. Again, thanks going out to Danny for getting us started this evening and taking us down to only $125 to go to end the week okay. You know how to, and by the way, a note, remember, we can't use the phone number while, and we did a lot of experimentation on this. We can't use the 304-574-8178 number during the Friday on the Front Porch conversation. So if you want to be part of it, you need to go through Skype in order so to do. Okay? All right, then. We'll take a break. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. child was laid to rest. That's Freedom's Child by Billy Joe Shaver. This is The Horn, Friday on the Front Porch for this, the 11th day of July, 2014. Note coming in from Michael in Madison. If the tired old computer will ever let it open. There we go. As long as we're talking LeBron, Michael in Madison says, my take was as follows. If a basketball player in a capitalist system, this is pretty good, so. If a basketball player in a capitalist system moves to another city to advance his career, he's derided for his disloyalty. If an industrialist in a capitalist system moves manufacturing to another nation to reduce labor costs, he's praised for increasing shareholder value. Hashtag American priorities. And Michael's buddy Eric responded, LeBrons are corporations, my friend. There you go. Yes, indeedy. All right, like I said, it's Friday on the Front Porch. You two are welcome to join in. And, in fact, not just welcome, but invited. And it generally, yeah, you know how that works. Good little gang in the HeadOnRadioNetwork.com chat room this evening as well. Let's go to the Horn Malloy Skype chat. Good evening, Sparky.
Hi, Bob.
How are you?
Hey, hanging in there.
I know. Well, I know.
Thanks for your kind words yesterday.
Well, they were sincerely meant, Sparky, and you mean a great, great deal to this whole effort and this community that we have built. And so I hope I was speaking on behalf of everyone. Is your family okay?
Oh, yeah. My sister's gone home. Back to Tennessee. I just got to get used to this big empty house now.
Yeah, it's amazing how much space is taken up by the presence of a human being, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Let's see who. Tim's with us. Hey, Tim.
Konnichiwa, Bob-san.
Konnichiwa, Tim-san.
Ikaga desu ka?
Yeah, see, that's where it ends for me.
How are you doing?
Yeah, pretty good, I think. I could have done without the note of the 4:30 p.m. earthquake tsunami warning notice.
Yeah.
I think that's been lifted now.
Has it? I hope so. Because
I saw it on breaking news.
All I read was people advised to get away from the coast, which seemed pretty serious to me.
Yeah, and they're pretty gun-shy over there anyway.
I would be. I would be. Good evening, Jeremy.
Evening, Bob.
How are you?
Good. Sparky, I assume we're talking about your father. If he passed, I'm sorry to hear that.
Thanks, Jeremy.
Sure.
And I'm sorting through who this long string of numbers is with the Canada icon. Is that John?
Hey.
How's it going?
Hey, not bad, man. You?
I'm hanging on and hanging in.
There you go.
That's right. You know, right, warm down here, and I guess we're in the midst of a drought, or not a drought, but a dry spell. That's what we call them around here, a dry spell. Every now and then it stops raining in the rainforest. And I wish there was a better way to predict those things, because there's lots of stuff that could be done when it's not raining. And once I'm ready to do the things I need to do, I'm sure the heavens will open, because that's the way my life runs. But welcome one and all, and like I said, anybody else who wants to join into the conversation is heartily encouraged to do so. Anybody got anything, just burr under the saddle, be under the bonnet, that they want to bring to the table before I get going?
No, I just wanted to say we did have a thunder and lightning storm this morning, but it didn't, not much water. Everybody was kind of freaking out because they were predicting dry lightning everywhere.
Which is often followed by fires, right?
Yeah, massive forest fires. Anything like 2008 would be just devastating. 2008, we had 1,200 fires start in one night.
Jesus. Yeah, let's
overwarming anyone?
Right. Oh, no, that's a myth. A myth. Yes?
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, right. I've got a couple out there. One, a little bit of good news. Of course, it's only good news until it gets to the rats. But there was big doings out of the U.S. Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia, the D.C. Circuit, today. They said that, now remember, the friends of coal and the people who want to eat, want us all to be eating coal on cornflakes and so forth, went and sued the EPA. Because they said the EPA was engaging in tyranny. I think that was one of the words they used. The state of West Virginia sued the National Mining Association, who said that birth defects happen in Appalachia because hillbillies can't help committing incest, sued the EPA, several other groups. It was a lawsuit instigated by Joe Manchin, and they said that the EPA was overstepping its bounds by actually paying attention to what they're supposed to be doing in the way of doing their job and enforcing the Clean Water Act. So the U.S. Court of Appeals, and I remember covering this story on the program, the U.S. Court of Appeals just rat-slapped a judge by the name of Reggie B. Walton. Because Reggie B. Walton had said, yep, National Mining Association's right. That there communist EPA, well, they're destroying freedom and liberty by trying to make it so people can actually drink clean water. And, in fact, the D.C. Circuit, a three-judge panel in the D.C. Circuit, held today that the conductivity guidelines, which has to do with dissolved solids in streams, were... since they weren't a final agency rule, that they were not subject to legal challenge. In other words, sit down, shut up, or actually go away, sit down, and shut up. It's not the big victory we'd like to have, but it's some kind of a victory. Now the decision will be made by the National Mining Association and the state of West Virginia. These are taxpayer dollars. You know, like you see on the highway signs, your tax dollars at work. These are taxpayer dollars that are being thrown down the rat hole to prosecute this case. And we'll find out if they want to go any further and take it up and get the rats and that Kennedy guy to overturn it. So it's a pretty big deal around here.
Hey, you conjured up Jeffrey from Netherlands.
Oh, hey, Jeffrey.
Hello. Hi, everybody.
I had a Dutch pronunciation problem earlier this evening. We've got a gun maniac running around the country talking about open rebellion against the government of the United States, and his name is Vanderbroegh.
And the best moment,
the best I could make out of it was Vanderbroegh.
Can you type it in the Skype chat?
Yeah. Let me do that. That's a very good idea. That's what you're here for, Sparky.
He is a sergeant.
Was.
There it is, Jeffrey.
I can't see it. Huh. I didn't get the message, so...
Maybe scroll down in your chat.
I am in... moment. No, I didn't get it.
Did the rest of you see it?
Yes, I'll send it to Jeffrey back channel.
Okay. Okay, so we'll maybe have an answer here. But by the way, when I said we weren't sure whether or not we'd be wasting more taxpayer dollars on this entirely frivolous lawsuit to try to help coal companies continue to poison West Virginians, because he's running for his life in a congressional race, my congressman of some 38 years, Nick Rahal, issued a statement saying, where'd it go? Today's decision is not the end of the debate. Congress will have something to say. Oh God. Yeah, and I'm sure Nick Ray Hall will stand with the Republicans again, which is horribly, horribly embarrassing, but I guess I've gotten used to it after a while. No, there was some pretty clear language in the case, though. Ken Ward Jr., writing at the Charleston Gazette, says, writing for the court, Judge Brett Kavanaugh said the administrative agencies have clear authority, that's an important thing, to come up with agreements to work together as the EPA and the Army Corps of Engineers did in devising enhanced coordination procedures for reviewing mining company proposals to bury streams beneath waste rock and dirt from strip mining. After all, this kind of interagency consultation and coordination is commonplace and often desirable, Kavanaugh wrote. Indeed, restricting such consultation and coordination would raise significant constitutional concerns. But he also kind of gutted the whole idea behind it. He claimed, Judge Kavanaugh did, that the EPA is not telling coal companies what to do or imposing specific standards for state regulatory agencies to enforce, you know, because it's just a guidance. You know, poison the streams if you want to, but if you don't, don't poison the streams if you want to, but if you want to poison the streams, go ahead. Who are we? We're the EPA. So I guess it's kind of a half a loaf. Oh, there's Sergi.
So Tim's doing the Google Translate thing for the guy's name.
Yeah, I'm looking here. I think I just like Vanderbilt.
Do you want to give it a run, Jeffrey?
I got a translation. It's Van der Buch.
Buch?
Buch.
Okay.
Van der Buch.
He calls himself Vanderberg, I think.
Oh.
Yeah.
German now, huh?
Right. Well, you know, like Booner calls himself Boehner. We're all through the looking glass. Who said hi there?
It's Larry.
Hey, Larry, how are you?
I'm doing okay. I see that Jeffrey is in here, and I see that Jeremy is in here. So I just wanted to say hello because I haven't talked to either of them in a while, and I hope everybody's doing well. And I'll be typing some in the chat instead of, you know, asking questions and stuff. I'll be listening.
Well, don't consider yourself muzzled or anything. You can ask questions when they occur or make observations. I mean, it's a regular joint, okay?
Yeah, well, obviously I'm upset at the Supreme Court, and obviously I'm upset at how the Republicans are treating Obama. I understand it, but I don't understand it. So if you can get where that's coming from, you're okay. All right,
Jim,
thank
there
you.
Was some good news today, Larry. There was a $71 billion budget. Surplus.
Well, thank you, Duncan. I hope everything's going okay.
That exploded.
I hope everything's going well with you, too, and I'll talk with you later, okay?
Okie doke.
Okay.
Thank you.
So last night on the program, we talked at some length about what's going on in Gaza. Sorry, there was a sneeze involved. And I saw this story, and I didn't get to it yesterday. But since we sort of clear out the stack on Friday on the front porch, this deserves a mention. This is like the anti-toaster for the for-profit media, and it goes out to ABC News, who one would expect to be, you know, I mean they build themselves as a professional news organization, right? And Diane Sawyer in particular. I think, wasn't it Diane Sawyer who came down to Appalachia where the water's poisoned and the coal industry has ruined everything and saw children living in poverty with bad teeth and declared that it was because they had Mountain Dew mouth? Wasn't that Diane Sawyer?
Yeah, that was her.
Yeah, because apparently hillbilly mamas start putting Mountain Dew in baby bottles just as quick as they get them off the breast. not paying any attention, of course, to all the toxins and poisons that are in people's wells and, you know, that kind of thing, that they bathe in and drink and cook with and brush teeth with. Yeah, not so much. No, Diane Sawyer had a, I guess they had a piece on ABC's World News about the hell that is being inflicted on Gaza by the IDF. And yet, how do you do this? I mean, this beats cat's effing, you know? Let's see. Here's the quote. "We take you now overseas now to the rockets." That's a couple of. "We take you overseas now to the rockets raining down on Israel today as Israel tried to shoot them out of the sky." And as she was saying that, they were running video footage of Gazans, Palestinians, trying to dig out from under the rubble of an Israeli air attack on a home. And then she went on and said, "And here now is an Israeli woman standing speechless among the ruins," or a woman standing speechless among the ruins, and described it as an Israeli family trying to salvage what they can. Now, one of the little pissant rockets that comes out of Palestine couldn't even begin to do the damage that was shown in the video footage. It was, in fact, video footage of damage inflicted on Gaza by the Israelis. You know, who knows? Maybe it was the explosion where they took out that 18-month-old. Yeah, kind of pre-crime. Sort of maybe like Colonel Chivington's statement in the 19th-century Colorado after the Sand Creek Massacre, in which they wiped out a bunch of women and children and said, "Nits make lice," right? It was pre-crime. That 18-month-old was going to grow up and be a terrorist anyway, right? But no, the for-profit media mavens over at ABC News can't even deliver the news even remotely straight. People digging out from an air attack rubble are Israelis, not Palestinians. And the devastation is from Hamas rockets, not the IDF weapons, which you and I and every other American helps to pay for. Isn't that just a little embarrassing? Here then, just for the fun of it, here's the clip. This is...
"Reporting in, and we take you overseas now to the rockets raining down on Israel today as Israel tried to shoot them out of the sky, all part of the tinderbox, Israelis and Palestinians, and here an Israeli family trying to salvage what they can, one woman standing speechless among the ruins. ABC's Alex Marquardt is in the middle of it all."
And Alex Marquardt did not say, "Diane, you moron, those were Palestinian peoples who had been attacked by Israel." No. Sorry, didn't happen.
Well, Bob, your audio is kind of going wacky.
Yeah, I'm sure it is.
But, I mean, as far as ABC News goes, and, oh, by the way, hello there, everyone. I just joined in a few minutes ago.
Yeah, hi, Sergio. Hi, Sergio.
Yeah. You know, there's a reason why for years and years and years I've referred to ABC as all basically clowns.
Oh, very nice. Well, they have, of course, they've had Glenn Beck on as a contributor from time to time, have they not?
Yes, they have. Although not recently, but they have in the past.
And let's see here. Speaking of the Beckerhead real quick, you realize that the Wingnuts have gotten extremely angry with him, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's been a certain contingent of the right wing that has never been fond of Glenn Beck. Because, you know, all of them are crazy over there, but when it comes to Glenn Beck, the conservatives that at least have the room temperature IQ realize that, ooh, he's a little bit crazy, you know.
Well, Sergi, they realize that he's, what do they call a carnival barker, somebody who's a who's a shuck artist,
boss, a hustler,
he's a radio person who does, you know, who sells, who's
grifter,
that kind of person, you know, they can see that with him, very obvious.
Yeah, what has the right wing annoyed with them lately that I've been reading is that, you know, Glenn Beck has been showing that the saying, you know, a stop clock is right twice a day is true, you know. He's actually said a couple of reasonable things in the last few weeks, and that has the right wing up in arms.
Oh, I love this comment. Need to all caps, of course. You know, right-wingers can't help screaming on the Internet. Need to seriously consider canceling the Blaze.com accounts immediately. Then caps lock off. Glenn Beck is a shill and a fake patriot. The clown in his tears is manipulating the masses by planting seeds. Do not believe this rhino. Cancel your memberships to the Blaze. All of this because he suggested, he said he was going to do it. He straight up said he was going to do it. He's going to load up a bunch of tractor trailers with food and water and teddy bears and soccer balls and take them down to the Texas-Mexico border to try to relieve the suffering of the little children crossing the border.
Talk about your photo op.
Oh,
well, you know, I think
that's the only reason. But still, even that has the right wing up in arms, even though they know it's him trying to self-promote.
Oh, there. Well, let's see. Glenn will be useless when Americans finally rise up to take. Wait, I got to get my Mike Vanderbilt voice on. Glenn will be useless when Americans finally rise up to take their country back. Just know that. There were many big mouths around to stir up the masses before the American Revolution began, most of whom were nowhere to be found when the bleeding started. Teddy bears are fitting here. Count on his begging and pleading. Well, just count on it. He has proven that ultimately he will not support anything but dumb luck or acquiescence in any real fight for our freedom. After his crying for surrender at Bundy's ranch, I don't trust him at all when it comes to the difficult work ahead for decent Americans.
Bob, this is what I think, and this is just what I think. I don't know if know for certain, but I think that people like Glenn Beck, he's a con artist, and he clearly is a cynic. Rush and perhaps some of these other people, they know that they're conning, they know that they're conning people, but the people that I'm concerned about are the people like George Bush and Sarah Palin, and because they don't know that they're, you know, nuts, but they don't know that they're nuts. Glenn Beck and Hannity and Rush, they know that they're perpetrating a con.
Yeah, those, but Larry, Caribou Barbie is a cipher. She's just a walking cartoon. She's down to begging for a slot on The View now, which will hopefully be soundly ignored. But what I find funny about this whole Glenn Beck piece is not that he would do that. He's a hustler and a grifter, and he'll do anything to rouse up a dollar, and he loves to wrap himself in the flag and go around flogging his Bible or his Book of Mormon or whatever it is. But it's the response of the hardcore wingnuts that is beautiful in this particular instance. Let's see. What the hell is wrong with you, Glenn, making nice with Montel and feeding illegals? Now, remember, we're talking about children. Children. They need to go back. This is not our problem feeding other countries' kids. It's all by design to, all caps again, they can't help it, overload the system and bring it down Cloward and Piven 101 strategy. Remember that, Glenn, period. Top down, bottom up. You used to be tough. What happened?
Why are right-wingers allergic to punctuation?
God, it's like Dick Cheney and garlic, isn't it?
Yeah, well.
Well, it's because, I think part of it is because things like grammar and syntax and punctuation rules are, you know, that's that sissy intellectual stuff.
Do they teach diagramming a sentence anymore?
No.
No.
They actually do here in Fort Worth. At least, really? You know, in the few years. I mean, now granted, I haven't been in school since 2009. When, you know, I graduated high school in 2009. But, you know, in high school, yeah, they taught, you know.
I don't remember. Or, I don't, we, you know, we've had
sentence diagramming and stuff like that. Predicates, subjects, you know.
We've had 4 kids go through the high school system here, and I don't remember any one of them ever having an assignment to diagram a sentence. Maybe I just missed out on that, but I don't recall it. But this stuff goes on. I mean, this is precious. Glenn is doing exactly what the leftists want. Cut the charade, Glenn, and just admit you sold out the country. A country without borders is not a country at all. Do us a favor and don't, that's capital D, don't, stop at the border. Take your soccer balls and teddy bears all the way to Central America and caps again. Capital S, stay, capital T, there. Again, children. These are children these hate mongers are talking about. A woman in Michigan, as we discussed last night, wants a minefield around a facility where the children might be housed until they can be given a fair trial and then shipped back to the hellhole that they came from.
Yeah, speaking as someone who lives in, you know, the state where most of these children are coming to, I follow the Facebook pages. I follow the Facebook pages of pretty much all of the major local media outlets, with the exception of Fox 4 News, because I got banned from that one. But, oh, yeah. And, you know, but I follow NBC 5 and ABC 8 and CBS 11. And, you know, every time the social media people at the stations, you know, that they manage Facebook pages, every time someone posts a, you know, story on, you know, someone from the station posts a story about these kids, it just immediately blows up with these, just some of the most hateful, vitriolic, just da-da-da, you know, right-wing sociopath, you know, responses, right? And, you know, after that, you know, the progressives of the area, and yes, there are progressives here, you know, post image macros, you know, memes in response. And I mean, it's sad and amazing to watch at the same time, because it's like, you know, because, you know, and, you know, one of the memes stuck out to me because it's so true, and it also drove these right wingers even more aped up. Who would Jesus deport?
Oh boy.
A progressive posted that, and it's like, it's so true. These people claim to be, I mean, you know, bless them, a lot of these Tets and progressives who also follow these pages, bless them, they're calling these right-wing haters around here out and saying, and y'all are calling yourselves Christians, you know, saying that, I mean, you know, saying that these kids need to be, you know, sent back and put in prison or killed, some of them are saying, and stuff like that. You know, that's totally against what Jesus would say, you know.
Well, and not only that, you remember I wasted a little bit of the precious finite time of my life and our lives to this idiot in West Virginia named Holly Fisher. She's the one who went all persecution complex after she put up a photograph that said how to make liberals' heads explode. And then she said, and then they said mean things to me, you know, and got a gig on Fox News and 12,000 new Twitter followers out of it and whatnot. Well, and again, this is from the same Glenn Beck post. And as I say again, we are talking here about children. We're talking about little 8-year-olds that have been bid fond farewell by their parents, knowing they'll never see them again. And just to begin to try to contemplate the heartache and the grief and the tragedy in that is enough to kind of shut you down. But no, not these right-wingers. Oh, hell no. No, no, no. Beck wants to out-liberal the liberals. Pelosi welcomed them. Jackson Lee gave them lollipops. Beck will give teddy bears. And then back to the all caps again, screaming, send their butts back with a swift kick. Yeah, really. Here's a right-winger that wants to kick 8-year-olds.
On top of that, I mean
that's some family values, ain't it?
Yeah, I mean, and see, as everyone, you know, who listens to this show knows, you know, here in Texas, we have some islands of sanity. Dallas, San Antonio, Austin, Houston, El Paso, etc. And Dallas County, which is, you know, Dallas County is pretty much a Democratic stronghold by this point. Even in the suburbs, it's a Democratic stronghold. And Dallas County said, we're going to house these kids and we're going to take care of these kids. We don't care what the other counties scream about. We don't care what the state screams about. We're going to take these kids in. And so lately, there's been people, there's been right wingers trying to incite riots in the city of Dallas over it. Because Dallas County dared to say, we're going to help kids.
Why is the country so crazy about all this stuff now? It used to be that the country, well, at least in a lot of places, the country was would be compassionate and be sensitive to the needs of kids and do all this. And now we have these discussions, which we, as far as I'm concerned, should not be having because they're crazy. You know, I just don't get why this is, why the news media cares to support or cares to, gin up the public by talking about these right-wingers that don't want to take care of kids. You know, if the media ignored these folks, the problem wouldn't go away, but it would certainly be minimized, and they certainly would be encouraging right-wingers to have this point of view. Maybe I'm being silly. I'm sorry. I'm being...
Yeah, you got to remember, you got Radio Rwanda out there telling... I mean, they're telling them about the kids having diseases and all this other stuff. And then come to find out there's a story, I think it was on Raw Story today, vaccination rate in Guatemala is higher than the United States for little kids because they got some of that free health care down there.
Yeah.
And that one alone, I'm glad you brought that up, Sparky, that little factoid alone is enough to send you reeling. I mean, for years we've talked about the fact that the infant mortality rate is higher in the United States than it is in Cuba. We've talked about the fact that the postpartum maternal death rate in the United States is higher than it is in Cuba. A Guatemalan child is more likely to be vaccinated against childhood diseases than an American child is.
Mm-hmm.
And these teabagging birther, deather, tenther, booger eater idiots want to talk about how we're the greatest country in the world? I don't think so. They can sell, but I'm not buying. And remember, again, we're talking about children. So hence, here comes another commenter to Glenn's piece. And he said, Beck, you are enabling evil. You're doing exactly what the NWO cabal wants. America Union, as in destruction of the states. But then again, you know this. Your children going to go to school. Let's see. No, wait. You know, Sergi, how you were saying they were allergic to grind, allergic to grammar? Your
punctuation.
Well, that too. Your children going to go to school with these kids? Your property tax going to educate these kids? Are there criminals going to be in your neighborhood? It's easy for you 1% to dump political failures on my neighborhood, not IYBY. I don't know what IYBY means.
MB. Oh, not
in your backyard.
Oh, in your backyard. Okay, thank you. A little translation help goes a long way. You go call the Honduran Nicaraguan whatever government and tell them to take responsibility and openly call for the arrest of Obama, all caps. Then I might believe you, but right now I see an evil, evil manipulator. What the? I mean, it leaves you dumbstruck, doesn't it?
guess it's just exposes the alternate reality world.
Well, going back to Glenn Beck, he is so dreadfully afraid of having violence tied back to him that he's pulling back from all that extreme stuff. He talked about Marietta, I think that's the place in California, and he described it as, well, what can people do when the government turns their back on them? And he got out of Bundy Ranch, even though he was a big proponent when it first started. As soon as all the Jonesians and all the snipers showed up, because he really is scared of having something happen and having his name dragged into it. He's on a whole spiritual kick right now. You know, I think he mentions Martin Luther King so many times in 3 hours that if I were to do a game where I took a shot every time, I'd be in a coma. Like, that's where the guy is. He's pure big business now. Everything always comes back to personal responsibility. But in personal responsibility, that means no government and corporations do whatever they want.
That's exactly right. By the way, Bob and Duncan, Dunk would be interested in this. The Democratic Party is having their e-board, their executive board meeting in Oakland. And I wanted to ask Bob and ask people if there is anything important, and Tim might be interested in this too, if there's anything important that comes down from the e-board, whatever they're discussing, would you like for me to let you know what's happening? I mean, if there isn't, I'm not gonna mention anything. I mean, I won't bring it up or talk about it. But if there is, do you want me to let you know what's happening?
Sure. I mean, it especially depends on, you know, how we define it.
Okay, because they'll probably be talking about issues and other than, you know, mechanics of how to get out the vote, because what the party's concerned about is running campaigns and getting Democrats elected. That's what they're there for.
You know, if it was up to me, I'd love to see a policy statement come out that they support, you know, an end to mountaintop removal in Appalachia and the passage of H.R. 526 and introduction of it in the Senate. That'd be beautiful. Hey, by the way, a little funny out here. Well, not funny, but it is funny because whenever Irish Dave writes, it's funny. But with regard to children crossing the Mexican border, Irish Dave just observed in an email a few moments ago. The question is, how old was Bishop Chicken Mitt's daddy when that Mexican-born youngster crossed the border? It's the absolute truth.
Yeah.
Remember, Mitt's grandpappy, Willard's grandpappy, mm-hmm. Took the family from what was it, Utah to Arizona, because they were going down to Mexico where they could breathe real freedom and have lots of sister wives. And then things got a little hot down there, and Utah became a state, and they just snuck right back across the border again.
They did a story about that. They went down there. There's still like a small Mormon community still left down there.
I had no idea.
I remember when during the campaign they were talking about it.
Oh, and hey, by the way, Sparky, a note coming in from Jim. He says, to Sparky, my condolences on the loss of your dad. Sincerely, Jim and the cats.
Mm-hmm. Dunk, you're kind of, well, since you've just mentioned that, Bob, did Dad pass away, Dunk?
Yesterday morning.
Dunk, I'm really sorry.
Well,
I'm really, really
Larry, it's been coming for a long time.
And you're cherishing a life very well lived, aren't you, Sparky?
Oh, yeah. I've been rolling around his history in my brain.
Is there going to be a memorial happening?
Next spring. We're going to inter my dad and my mom's ashes in Veterans Cemetery in Igo.
Okay, so...
Because my oldest sister's in Alaska right now, and And well, my other sister went back to Tennessee, so they made the plans. They're going to come up here next spring, and we're going to take care of it.
Well, please make sure that you let everyone know. Send them my condolences. Okay? All right.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Hey, Bob.
Yeah.
Remember what happened about 20 years ago when people went in arms against Clinton? 20 years ago.
You talking about Ruby Ridge or?
No, Ellen Gonzalez.
Oh, I'd forgot.
Yeah. December 6th when they deported him.
Yeah, they oddly enough, they wanted that child to stay.
Yeah.
Yeah, because, well, that was because.
Wasn't Hannity all over that story?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I had completely forgotten about that. You said up in arms, and I immediately thought David Koresh, but no, absolutely. Yeah, that's that. Well, see, that was the right kind of child, Tim.
Well, I mean.
I mean, he was being saved from that filthy communist hellhole that is Cuba.
Yeah, but El Salvador and which of the two countries?
Oh, they got freedom.
They're communists.
No, they got freedom.
They're socialist. I thought socialism was the same as communism, which is evil.
Oh, well, of course it is. If you've got the IQ of a freaking gnat. Yeah, it is.
Or teabaggers.
Well, that's what I did. Well, but I repeat myself. The IQ of a gnat or a teabagger. Same, same.
Yeah. Ellen Gonzalez just popped up all of a sudden.
Wonder how he's doing. Wonder if he's down there in Cuba plotting the communist takeover of Merca.
Well, according to CNN on December 20th, 2013, he signs a U.S. embargo against Cuba.
Well, that's pretty healthy. I mean, I do too.
Yeah.
I would far, well, haven't had any in a very long time, but I would far prefer not to leap through the hoops I have to leap through just to get a damn cigar.
You want
how
go,
many you want,
you
want Bob?
To go straight to the source? Oh, you can get them in Canada.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, they're way too expensive. I got a few. I actually snuck a few back in. Shh.
Time to go to Mexico.
No, when we went on the Libboat cruise, we stopped in one place that was not a U.S. possession, namely, Grand Turk. Grand Turk.
You're all Skypey.
Oh, darn. We stopped in Grand Turk, and I went scurrying all over the island and finally found a cigar shop in the airport there and bought a little handful of Cuban sticks.
Skypey!
Yeah, I know.
Oh.
I know. But I'm not Skypey to the stream.
No, not on the stream.
Right. And God only knows why this happens, but it does.
All curse Skype.
Yeah. Someday we'll find some other way to do this, but not yet. But anyway, that was my Cuban cigar story.
Okay. Now you're better.
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe that was Agent Fred just stepping
yeah,
in.
Yeah. He didn't want us to know about your Cuban cigar story.
Right.
But everybody else heard it.
Right. Because, well.
Those are good cigars. Ugh.
Yeah, I just got an email from Marty saying, off to Vancouver I go. by the way, it's 9 minutes past the hour, and I wanted to update. Thank you very much, Jeremy, who's in the conversation this evening. Thank you very much, Jeremy, for jumping in. We are now $120 away from reaching the evening's fundraising goal, 12 at 10, 10 at 12, 2 at 60, 4 at 30, 3 at 40. You know, PayPal button, or just shoot me a note if you want to participate through the mails. It would, as I've said, be nice to keep paying bills. As I went into a bill paying frenzy on Wednesday evening, and more still to pay. But anyway, thank you very much, Jeremy, and thank you to Danny for getting us started. And I'm sure Jeremy and Danny would love to have some company this evening. Okay, anybody else? Anything?
Got a story?
Yeah.
Did you hear the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee is raising money off of the Wasilla Wendigo's rants about impeachment?
No, and that's a no. But we have a new term. You can't just throw Wasilla Wendigo out there and then just keep blowing on past it.
I didn't make that up. It's a blog I read from a guy in Alaska, and I guess it's a Politico story.
I prefer Stephanie Miller's term for the quitter from Wasilla.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, there's a million of them. The half baked Alaskan.
The lunatic from Lake Lucille.
I hadn't heard that one. Of course, I'm terribly partial to Mussolini.
Mm-hmm.
And my own creation, Godzilla from Wasilla.
Mm-hmm. Offensive Godzilla, of course.
Oh, exactly.
That's funny.
Godzilla!
Godzilla!
What would ever possess the Republican Party to stoop so low as to advance someone like a Sarah Palin to
stupidity?
That particular position.
You do know why McCain picked Sarah Palin, right, Larry?
Right, Andy?
Because they wanted to have a woman candidate.
Mm-hmm.
But there are women in the Republican Party who have a lot more gravitas.
That did not enter the inquiry, because Sarah Palin was deemed to have a lot, because remember, we're talking about Republican men, and Sarah Palin was deemed to have a lot more hotitas.
She winked at me.
Right.
Anyway, they got a flood of grassroots donation. It was just short of $3 million fundraising goal it set after House Speaker threatened to sue Obama last month.
But it's not about hotitas. It's about whether or not the woman has some kind of grasp of policy and has some sense of wisdom about how, you know, about how to deal with things in a
Yeah, you know, but no, Larry, it is about hotitas, because the Republican Party considers their voters to be very low information and very easily swayed, and they're absolutely correct on both parts.
Okay, well, you know, there used to be some intelligent Republicans in the Congress years ago, but now they're all blue dog Democrats. So,
and what's the word used to?
I'm sorry, what's that? Okay.
Well, the crazies got them all so scared shitless that they got to go crazy too. I'm glad I'm going to disconnect my dad's phone in a month. I won't be hearing any of those calls from my congressman anymore about the evils of Obamacare.
Keep it. Why don't you record the phone calls, do what Lottie did, and make phony phone calls?
Well, they're like conference calls he does every so often.
More the reason why to keep the phone line.
When you got to pay $50 a month for it.
Oh, screw that.
Because we got an internet phone.
Ah.
I know the internet goes out, but I'm not. We had a storm last winter that knocked out his phone line for several weeks.
Ew.
And I finally found an AT&T guy working down the street, and I corralled him, and he said he'd come down and fix it. And he did.
Was he a union guy, too?
Oh, yeah, CWA.
Oh, okay. And he talked shop and got the job done, huh?
I don't remember if we talked shop. I think I told him I was at VW.
But, oh, okay, I'll get it done right now.
But it was a windy, it was still a kind of a windy day when he came down and fixed it. Anyway, I just can't see paying it $50 a month anymore.
Yeah, I get it. I talked to one of them people who call in like Lottie's phones and say, would you like to donate to the Church of whatever, whatever?
Well, today I got a drug recall notice for something. Computer call.
Bob, I gotta tell you, there's a difference between trying to be open and giving people, you know, the benefit of the doubt and trusting in people's good nature and then just being a complete fool and being impressionable to the max. And sometimes I can't figure out which one I am. I'm sorry. You know,
I think these telemarketers now have figured out if you still have a landline phone line, you're fairly old.
But the funny thing is that for people who have their phones, for instance, through the cable company, you still get the calls. You still get the calls.
Mm-hmm.
Because the way, and it goes back to how the lists are built, the call lists, and having worked in telemarketing, much to my eternal and undying shame, I know a little bit about this. The numbers are bought, and the people who sell the numbers are the phone companies or the cable companies. I mean, the six lines that we have here when the phone box works ring constantly, and they're all telemarketers because Shentel sold the numbers to a company that aggregates numbers for telemarketers.
So it must be nice now. They haven't figured out your Skype number yet.
No, they haven't. They haven't.
ComCrap is great for doing that to us. We have all their services, and we get phone calls all the time that show up on our boxes. Well, one box. I bought a TiVo box, so I get away from them. And on their boxes, the numbers always show up, but it's some telemarketer or some lawyer looking for someone who lived there years ago trying to set up a debt. I found that if you put those six numbers on the Do Not Call registry, they'll stop calling. It's by law. They have to do it within 30 days.
Oh, yeah, and I always punch nine.
Yeah,
but
they don't listen.
Well, sometimes they do and sometimes they don't.
By the way, I'm sorry for interrupting the flow of the conversation.
You didn't.
I apologize.
You didn't.
For that.
You didn't.
Who was just speaking?
That was Jeremy.
Was that Jeremy? Yeah, I wanted to do a little one-on-one with Jeremy for just a second. That's all. Okay. So I'm sorry about disrupting the flow of the conversation.
Go ahead and do it, Jerry.
Okay. All right. No, I just wanted to text with him. That's all.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's fine.
So I have some pretty amazing news from North Texas here.
Yeah.
Next week, I say just for Texas, but it's going to impact the whole United States in some way, shape, form, or fashion. I'm sorry, Duncan, but y'all are going to be baking over there in the West pretty bad, but over the Central and Eastern U.S., there's a buckle in the jet stream that's going to be happening early middle of next week, and cooler than normal temperatures and much, much rainier conditions are on the way for the central and eastern third of the country.
And us?
For me, that's really bad news, Sergi.
For us in Texas, it's good news. And, Tim, for y'all in California, since y'all are going to be under the high pressure ridge, get ready for just hot and dry.
Dry, I don't mind. Humid, I hate.
Well, we're used to it up here.
We're not down here.
July and August. It's tomato weather.
I hate tomatoes.
Yeah, how are the tomatoes doing?
Oh, they're starting to come on pretty good. I've got my first couple big ones.
Time to order that Benton's bacon.
I know you keep after me. I'll try to do it.
I mean, you know, it's not like they're buying advertising. It's just that, you know, when it's that good, you have to tell people. You become a proselytizer of bacon.
Yeah, well, my sister, before she left, bought a couple pounds of peppered bacon at the butcher shop.
Ooh.
It's some good stuff.
I'm not sure if they do the peppered stuff or not. I've always been just thrilled with the regular.
Yeah, but I got to eat up the peppered first, too. She had a sandwich, big slice of tomato on it the other day with some bacon.
See, I'll sit down. I really will. I'll just sit down with some tomato slices and salt and whatever else I can find handy, you know, whether it's cottage cheese and tomatoes or tomatoes and avocados or tomatoes and onions or tomatoes and cucumbers. I can be a serious vegetarian this time of year,
mm-hmm.
as long as there are fresh vine, really vine ripened tomatoes. There's nothing more infuriating than walking through the grocery store and seeing that sign on front of a bunch of those little green baseballs that started turning color on the way up from Florida. Vine ripened tomatoes. You know, my ass. tell that to some incredulous goober who's willing to believe it. I know better. Or when you go to a sandwich shop and they say, "Do you want tomatoes?" and you say, "If what you've got sitting there is tomatoes, no," because they're not tomatoes. But I'm funny that way. I mean, I love just washing the dirt off of them, warm from the garden, and eating them like an apple.
Mm-hmm.
With lots of salt, of course.
I like to give them a cold water bath first and then put them in the refrigerator.
See, that's what I'm saying. I like them cold, but that, you know, with the heat of the sun still on them and just, you know, just get just enough of a wash to get the dirt and stuff off. Whoa.
Mm-hmm. Well, we got the little early girls. They're just about the size, you know, they're a little smaller, but they're about an inch and a half, 2 inches round, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And those are pretty good right off the vine. But when the big ones, I like to get the big ones nice and cold and slice them.
Oh, now see, I don't have a chance. Sitting here talking about tomatoes and they're not quite ready. Nah, they're just turning around here. So I've still got a little bit more of a wait in front of me. But that is one of my favorite things, avocado and tomato and sweet onion salad with a little bit of balsamic vinegar and lemon juice and salt. Because somehow or another...
Is that you moaning, Tim?
Yeah, that's...
And I'm getting hungry now. Mm.
Yeah, this is the food porn segment of the program.
You can have the tomatoes, though.
Heathen.
I don't like sushi either, so.
Yeah, y'all can have the avocados, but that's because I'm allergic to those.
Oh, man.
No, what's really, really neat when you make the tomato and avocado and onion salad and you put the balsamic vinegar and the lemon on them, for some reason, I think because avocado has fat in it. And the fat in the avocado reacts with the acid and the vinegar, and it creates, just as you toss it together, it creates a bit of an emulsification so that you get, you know, it thickens almost immediately into its own sort of salad dressing, which it is. And just, wow. But hell, this time of year, tomatoes on cornflakes, tomatoes on ice cream, I don't give a damn. So one of the things that my mother used to make that was just delightful was tomato preserves. And oh my God. You wouldn't think it would be good, but it was. Flavored with, you know, there's sugar involved, of course. And, I mean, you can them up just like strawberry preserves or whatever. There's lemon and tomatoes and sugar and a couple of other things. I think she used to, because they kind of marinate and steep, and I think she'd use a little bit of fresh ginger once in a while. Whoa.
Yeah, my mom used to can a bunch of stuff. Tomatoes especially. Still got the big old canning pot.
Well, you ought to look up that tomato preserves recipe, Sparky. You might enjoy it. Because, I mean, on a warm piece of sourdough with a little bit of butter, whoo! Special.
I'll check it out.
I think the recipe is still in the Ball Canning Guide.
Okay, I'll look that up.
So what else? You said earlier the squash was going crazy. What else? What else is in the garden?
That's it. Oh, we got butternut squash too. I don't know what to do with it. My sister maybe planted that when she was here in May. When she comes back from Alaska in September, she wanted to have some here. I guess it keeps for a long time.
Now, is that the little Lobe one, or is it, because there's acorn squash and butternut squash, and there's one of them that you can just hollow out and scrape.
That was the acorn squash. We did that last year. You hollow them out, and you do stuffed bell peppers, you can meats and cheeses, and I made it for my dad a couple times. We didn't decide not to grow those this year because he says, I don't want no more of those. They were good, but I kind of got burnt out on them.
That's what happens with squash generally. But you can roast butternut too.
Yeah.
And it's real tasty that way. No, I was thinking about the acorn because you slice it lengthwise and scoop out the hollow. And then we used to bake it with a little bit of bourbon and maple syrup.
Well, this was the first time we did it last year, and I was experimenting with some stuff.
Spaghetti squash is fun.
Mm-hmm.
All that classic corn, bean, squash agriculture. Changed the world. Part of the Columbian Exchange.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, did you see that story? A completely separate topic. Did you see that story over at Think Progress today? A few days ago. They have figured out what the cost of the F-35 Joint Strike Fighter has meant to this country in terms of money wasted. The money, and this one just really knocks you down. The money wasted on the F-35 has been enough money to put every homeless person in the United States in a $600,000 mansion. Wow. For a plane that nobody really wants.
Time for 60 Minutes to do another puff piece.
Oh, yeah, right.
Bring that general back on to sell it.
$600,000 mansion.
Yeah.
What do you buy? Squeeze Harper down low so you'll buy him.
That's like a 6-bedroom house.
Didn't the Australians cancel some of their order or something?
We'll find out from Robert in a minute. Oh, by the way, I had an update from Robert on the carbon tax in Australia. It's kind of a little bit of good news. He said, I reported on the death of the carbon tax 2 days ago. He said, I have to send a correction. We still have the carbon tax. After agreeing to support the removal of the carbon tax, the Palmer United Party, which is a party of three senators in the upper house funded by billionaire Clive Palmer, Robert said, I distrust any political party named after its alleged founder. Well, the Palmer United Party backed out of the agreement to end the carbon tax. They did so yesterday, or day before yesterday, depending on how you look at the international dateline. And they voted with the Labor Party to defeat the carbon tax repeal bill in the Senate. Robert says, so we still have the carbon tax. At least for now, it's become a political football. The Liberal Party, which is actually the Conservative Party, we would think of it as the Conservative Party. The Liberal Party is determined to get rid of it, and smaller parties will use that determination as a bargaining chip to get what they want. It's how we ended up with the repressive goods and services tax. So, good news and not so good news. By the way, when we were talking about all the various nicknames for Sarah Palin, Greg chimed in and said, Queen Crab. King Crab, Queen Crab.
Was that Greg 2000?
That's just Greg. That's just Greg.
Okay.
We got Gregs. We've got a confraternity of Jims, a confraternity of Gregs.
Greg can actually probably tell you where Marietta, California is, so you can get an idea of how Republican that area really, really is. That whole area, Temecula and Marietta, mostly retired people from what I remember, Hemet.
Temecula to me always sounded like something you put on athlete's foot.
Okay. Well, I went to high school in Palm Springs, but I haven't been down to that area for a long time, Greg, so maybe you can point out just what that area just actually is in California.
Yeah, my uncle lives in one of the big red bastions of California. He lives in Irvine.
Well, I could probably say something. I can say a profane word on this chat, can I?
You can say anything you want to. It's a regular joint.
All right. Well, we were at a Democratic Party e-board meeting in Orange County, or maybe it was in Irvine or something, and my brother was with me when he was going with me to all these things, helping me out, and he said something he went to a party or something, and he said, you know, some. We can't afford to get our dicks washed in this place.
I don't know what the price of one of those is out there.
Well, Irvine, they have a University of California there, but it's a very wealthy area of Orange County. So, you know, and that's not saying, you know, I'm not trying to stereotype anybody. Or I'm not assuming anything. I'm just telling you that Irvine and Anaheim Hills and a lot of those places down there in Orange County, not all of them, but a lot of those places are really tony, you know, high income places. So that's Murrieta I can't talk about, but Irvine I can certainly say that. And okay, thank you.
Murrieta is white trash, no offense. In the Riverside area by the 15 and 215 area. It's a lot of, what was it, meth labs out there. I think that's pretty well.
Well, you know, Daryl Issa lives in, I don't even know where the hell he lives.
San Diego.
He's down there. Oh, by the way, Larry, Greg 2002 said, it's not me, Larry. Sent me a text.
Oh, I apologize.
There's another Greg.
Okay. I apologize.
Menifee.
Todd and Kathy are with us now.
Hey, Todd and Kathy.
Hi, Bob. How you doing?
Hey,
Kathy's waving hi. She's feeding the dogs right now, but good evening, all.
Hey, Todd.
How are you doing, Tim?
I'm doing fine, thank you. How are you?
Oh, doing good. Had some running to do this evening and just got in and got supper down, so we're good to go for the long haul tonight.
The drummer boy.
That's it.
For those in the stream, Todd and Kathy's avatars, Todd sitting at a drum set.
Are those roto times? Oh, it's you.
No, actually, those are some regular drums, and then there's some electronic drums mixed in with them.
Oh, cool.
Was that the kind five? Hey, Tim, was that the 535 highballing for Yuma there a few minutes ago?
Yeah, I think so. No bomb train, though, believe it or not.
Yay.
You haven't seen one down there?
Nope, not yet.
No Bakken crude going through, huh?
Nope.
Dunk, what does a bomb train look like as opposed to a normal train that
it's
goes?
It's got them big old black tank cars.
Yeah, it's three. In the case of a classic one that comes through here, Larry, it's 300 big black tank cars in a row with an engine in front.
Usually followed by a good trail of flames.
Well, it's not terribly funny, but it's...
Yeah, the only thing I saw the other day when I was in town was the lumber haulers going back north to Oregon or Washington. Going rumbling through town. Because that's what we'll see. You'll have part of the train will be lumber. That's a good combination. Raw lumber, lumber. And then the tank cars mixed in.
Well, any good Boy Scout, Sparky, knows that what you want to have for a really good campfire is a good supply of tinder and fuel. And you've got it in one nice little railroad train.
Mm-hmm.
Now all you need is an ignition source. And that's up front. Oh, speaking of railroads, did you see the story, and I think it was out of Montana, of the railroad train that was carrying the fuselages of three passenger jets that derailed and went off into the river?
Yeah, I seem to have read something about that.
You know, that opened a lot of questions for me. Why do you transport jet fuselages by rail? And I'm not trying to be overly simplistic here.
Because they're so long.
Okay, I get that. Let me put it this way. Why are the planes not assembled completely where the fuselages are built?
Because it's South Carolina?
Now we're getting somewhere. The next thing, was the train eastbound out of Washington and Boeing's outfit there, or were they westbound from South Carolina, Stan?
Probably from South Carolina. I read a story once where the guys at Everett, Washington, the main plant, were complaining about things not being done, wiring harnesses not complete, and all kinds of stuff that they'd have to fix because they put the wings on it, the engines, and they test fly them there. You know, once they come off the assembly line, they fly them at least once.
And so it seems, and hence the original question that I asked, wouldn't it make sense just to build, because I think at, for instance, Bombardier, that makes the Canadair regional jet, I think the whole jet gets built in the same place, and then they fly it to wherever they're going.
That's Brazilian plane, right?
No, I thought, well, maybe Bombardier, okay, yeah, that's Brazilian, and then the Canadair, I thought Bombardier was Canadair. But anyway, they get built all in the same place. It seems, I guess I'm being too obtuse here, but it seems industrially dumb to build the fuselage in one place, put it on a train, send it across the country to have the wings put on.
Well, we've got something similar to that going on with the car industry. When we go up along Lake Erie taking Route 90, we will see truckloads of half-built cars going from Detroit or Toledo out to Youngstown to be, you know, have this added or that added or whatever the case is. The cars aren't even built in one place anymore.
Yeah, see, I got an email in saying if it's Boeing, they have several places to secure parts and different parts in different places for security and for cost savings. I'll bet you that 99% of that is cost savings and the other part is security. You know, the 1%. It strikes me as being our buddy Bruce refers to MBAs as the scourge of the American economy. And I've suggested that MBA, especially a Harvard MBA, stands for more bigger assholes. But this idea where we're going to take industry and subject it to the horrors of the accounting department. You know what? If we build this with a slightly cheaper rivet, you know what I mean? Yeah, Jim's telling me now security reasons. And how secure, and obviously from the story in question, how secure is a train fuselage on freight tracks that are badly under repaired and in poor shape? How secure is that? Apparently not very, because three of them wound up in a river in Montana. I saw the picture, and they kind of looked like big snakes coming up out of the water.
You should have seen the train that hauled the wind turbine blades for that big wind farm they built out of Redding.
Mm-hmm.
There's a deal on YouTube. I can find it. Show it to you sometime. The whole train was just nothing but the blades. And then they get them to Redding. And then they had to offload them, put them on these special trucks, shut down part of I-5 to get them across to where they, to 299. And, I guess they had like four highway patrolmen to lead them up the mountain. They all came at once. I mean, it was just a couple days they did it.
Oh, and Devin reminds me, let's do remember that the shop in South Carolina that you were referring to, Sparky, is non-union. Right. So God only knows what those things are like when they come off the line there.
Well, that's the QC. What I read was the QC when South Carolina sucks. I mean, people at Everett were really complaining about what they had. Because if all the wiring harnesses aren't put in the way you're supposed to, I mean, you got to. It's a bitch tracking all that shit down.
No, I don't doubt it.
Just from my little experience in the Air Force working with them damn harnesses. Because they're all the same, all the wiring's the same color. It just has, it has system numbers on it.
Attach the black wire to the black wire and hope for the best?
No, they're white wire. They're all bundles. They're all made up and they're screwed together with cannon plugs.
Well, it got me thinking about the status of rail in this country, because many, many years ago now, Bossman Wayne and I took that long ride from Thurmond, West Virginia. It's supposed to be a 14-hour trip, and it wound up being something like a 22-hour trip. That long ride from Thurmond, West Virginia to Chicago, Illinois. And if you take the Cardinal, which is what that Amtrak ride is called, if you take the Cardinal, you will find out, much to your own dismay and horror, just exactly how bad the rail infrastructure is in this country. You know those Lee cloths that they have in the bunks, in the bunk areas, that you hook up to make sure that you don't get thrown out of your bunk overnight. Well, those actually went into use because the cars we would cross sections of tracks that would make you think that the sleeper cars had absolutely no suspension in them whatsoever. I mean, I'm talking about it felt like a 3-foot drop on the springs. And, of course, these are rail tracks that are typically used by freight trains.
Oh, of course.
And, in particular, by coal freight trains. And now they're, of course, used by bomb trains. There you go.
That would be nice when they get the high-speed rail built in here in California.
I'm just glad that I experienced high speed rail once in my life, so that I would know what I'm missing.
Mm-hmm.
And I suspect my sentiments are probably similar to a lot of other people's. If I had a choice between traveling by high speed rail and traveling by air, any guess as to what I'm going to pick?
Rail.
You betcha. Because it's a much more comfortable, pleasant experience.
Mm-hmm.
How about good old Todd Akin doubling down on his women can't get pregnant by legitimate rape?
Oh, God, wasn't that beautiful?
Yeah.
That was the ancient conservative complaint. They took me out of context, wasn't it? Oh, by the way, more coming in on airline security. Note here, major security, I worked there for DOD. Parts move with different modes of transport. DOD stuff secure. Commercial, not so much. Cost is a major factor, as parts of Boeing are more cost-effective than other parts as far as the economy and the unions and so forth. So consequently, on the ancient and antiquated freight rail system of this country, entire plane fuselages cross the country. By the way, a note coming in from Robert in Australia regarding the F-35 that we talked about a few minutes ago.
Mm-hmm.
Robert noting, as of April 23rd, 2014, Australia is set to spend $12.4 billion on 72 F-35s. We're getting the same BS about these aircraft from the federal government as we got for the F-111s back in the 1960s. The F-35 will provide a major boost to the ADF's intelligence, surveillance, and reconnaissance capabilities, says Tony Abbott. Even I, Robert says, can tell you that it'd be cheaper to buy $11 billion to buy a few hundred drones to do that. Australia doesn't have an aircraft carrier, so the F-35s are likely to be stationed in southern New South Wales, a good 1,000 clicks from where they'd be useful, because that's where our Air Force bases are. No news at this end of the order being canceled. And probably not. No, and John was right. Stephen Harper is going to buy him a big old croaker sack full of them, too. Because, you know, y'all are under constant threat up in Canada.
Yeah, the only one question is, do you know how many planes the F-35 is replacing?
No.
It's replacing everything.
Well, yeah.
The F-18 up.
Yeah, the F-14, the F-15. The
F-14's already gone.
Yeah.
The F-16, the F-18, the stealth fighter is replacing a ton of stuff, and that's part of the reason why, plus our location and the Air Force base has been here in Vermont since 45, why we're replacing all our F-16s with 20 of those in 2020 or something like that.
The only problem is you can't really say that they're replacing anything when the plane catches fire because the pilot climbs into the cockpit.
Right, and I mean, the Raptor had its own problems a while back. The cockpit, the breathing mask, the charcoal that thins out the carcinogens and stuff was getting into the guy's mouth and into their lungs and making them sick from that.
But isn't warfare going to be a guy in an armchair sitting in a bunker in North Dakota?
Not necessarily. Aircraft carriers are going to have drones on them.
So it'll be a guy sitting in an armchair on an aircraft carrier.
I wonder if they already have them on the aircraft carriers.
Yeah, George H. Bush has them.
By the way, as we roll down toward the end of the evening, and it's been a delightful conversation, 10 minutes before the hour, Jeremy and Danny are the only ones who have responded this evening for fundraising. If anybody else would like to jump in, it would be really helpful, because that way we won't start, we will not start Moran Monday in a $275 hole. We're at $125 now, and anybody who wants to kick in and help, well, those holes really suck. Please believe me when I say so.
I just want to say one thing. It was a delight to listen to you the first hour on internet radio that I have taken possession of. It will never play conservative radio ever again.
Oh, I get it. Yeah, yeah. As opposed to walking around with your mobile device in your pocket.
Well, I still might do that sometime. The Kindle's always a little bit behind. But I don't know if that was behind, but it was sure sounded nice.
Oh, what kind of device?
It's a Logitech. The one that Lottie recommended to me years ago when my dad was complaining about radio, so... It's a squeeze box radio from Logitech.
Hey, Bob, I'm going on vacation. I can afford to give another $5, so I'm going to send it over here in a couple seconds. But other than that, I'm tapped out.
Oh, don't sweat it, Jeremy. No, you help. I mean, you don't have to double down. Hopefully, folks will just jump in with you and Danny, and we'll get where we need to go.
Already.
Okay, so we need something to... Okay, and by the way, Greg, who sent in Queen Crab notes, okay, I'll differentiate from here on out, Bob. I'll sign my emails as Greg from Talibandiana. Greg from Talibandiana also offers another reference for Sarah Palin. Fulton's True Folly. Hadn't heard that one.
Isn't he the steam engine guy?
No, that's Ben Birch. I don't know. Maybe Greg
no.
is too.
No,
oh, Fulton. No, Steamboat.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Thank you, Sal. Sal just jumped in, took us down to $110 to go. Thank you very much, Sal. Sal is a genuine pillar of keeping things going here, and we appreciate it. Thanks, Sal.
Can I recommend that video I sent you the other day, Bob? Addicted to Humboldt.
Oh, yes. Yeah,
to the horn audience.
I got a big kick out of that.
Good little marketing ploy for Humboldt County.
AddictedToHumboldt.com, right?
Yeah.
Certainly made me want to go there.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're kicking it around for a horn in up there next year.
That would be all kinds of fun. And if
we go on Memorial Day, we could see the Connecticut sculpture race.
That would be a hoot, because there's in the YouTube video, the ad, for all intents and purposes, there's a little bit of fun footage of the Connecticut sculpture race, and that would be a blast.
Mm-hmm.
And I love the name of the horn inn.
Horn Inn and Humboldt.
See, it just
and then we could go see the Humboldt Crabs play.
Oh, fun too! Baseball team.
Mm-hmm.
Why are they the Crabs?
I don't know. That's just the name of. They were Reading the other day playing the Reading team.
Because they're grumpy.
Well, you can get some real good crabs over in Eureka.
No, it's not really a baseball team. It's just a bunch of people getting together and, you know, playing. And they're grumpy people.
Oh, okay.
Well, they were made famous once on the Tonight Show with Jay Leno a few years ago.
Cool.
I would love to see that neck of the woods.
Mm-hmm.
And it all starts with the guy getting hooked on his first redwood.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause you know, after you've done redwood, you can't just walk away.
I know. I have it in my veins now.
Yeah. No one can love just one.
Well, I got two.
You have what in your veins, Dunk? I was away for a few minutes. What?
Redwoods.
Okay.
I've got two of them in the backyard, and they're both of them are over 100 feet tall.
Yeah. I don't understand Reagan and whatever the guy's name, James Watt. And they said, once you've seen one, you've seen them all.
Well, because they don't, they know the price of everything and the value of nothing, as the old saying goes, Larry.
Yeah, I think that was from, was that from Oscar Wilde?
Yeah, I think that's Oscar Wilde.
Yeah.
I thought the saying was, once you've seen one, you pretty much want to see them all anyway.
That's how it ought to be.
Hi, Todd. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing all right. Thank you.
I'm okay. I'll ask you some questions in a little while.
Well, I'm proud to say we just dropped below the $100 mark. We are down to $90, thanks to Kim. Thank you very much. And
you know, something.
Wait! Big things are happening. So now, so Linda just took us to 70, and Michael and Madison just took us to 40.
That's great news. You know, Kathy has set up a monthly subscription for you.
Yes.
And it's such good news because I think a lot of us, how desperate that it is to keep this show on the air while or over the wires. And, you know, to get people just to contribute a couple of bucks a month goes a really long way in just keeping, you know,
yeah,
things alive.
Thank you. Thank you, Todd, and thank you, Kathy, because the bottom line is, since we're not selling subscriptions or selling access, since we're not selling anything, as a matter of fact, what we're talking about is the community working on its own behalf and looking out for everybody. This really is community, because by us being able to put the program out there without charging for anything for anybody, it means everybody can listen who wants to.
That's right.
And so
I just
kicked
mine in.
Oh,
sorry, go ahead,
thank
Bob.
You, Jeremy. And so, so people who can't, you know, people who can't still have access to the program, and they contribute a lot in other ways: ideas, conversation, email, and just being part of the community. So, in a way, in the past, we've complained that it's not the best model in the world, but it's a pretty good model because it's a model of people working together. And by the way, just a little bit of a follow-up to Greg in Taliban, Indiana. Sylvia said, I think it was actually Seward's Folly. Alaska was Seward's Folly, and I got it now. Yeah, there we go. Seward's True Folly. Yeah.
Because, Bob, if you see Kevin, if anybody sees Kevin Scott, I'm missing him, and I hope he comes back. Kevin Scott and any of the people that have been on the chat.
Larry?
Yeah.
Kevin has a problem with Skype now.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
He sent me an email yesterday.
Yeah, that's so
he's still out there.
Yeah.
He's listening.
And
hi to Kevin.
Yeah, hey to Kevin. And we got to get out of here, by the way.
So,
thanks everybody. Thanks to Sergi and Devin and Tim and John and Jeremy and Larry and Jeffrey and Todd and Kathy. Thank you one and all. Thanks, Devin. And thank you, Sparky, for all of your work with getting this group together and keeping it together for these many years. It's been a fun conversation. Have a wonderful weekend, everyone. We will be back with more on Monday before you even know it. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women at Coal River Mountain Watch. And thanks to all of you. Thank you very, very kindly. And always, 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 Gina. Oops, wrong button. It's all for you.